Well, do you have a plan to save for retirement? How are you doing on following it? What worries might you have? Those are some of the issues that we're going to be taking up today as we visit with Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner, and is the founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. He's the author of The Informed Investor and co-author of Save Your Retirement. Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you joining us on the Ideas Network today as we talk finances with Frank, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along. Maybe you've got some ideas of your own about how you've saved for retirement, or maybe you have questions about it. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can also post a question on our Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show, and you can do that. Frank Armstrong with us by phone. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Larry. Always a pleasure.
Well, thanks so much for taking time to be with us today. Sometimes I think there's a misconception that retirement planning only works for the wealthy or those that are much better off. How do you respond to that or answer that?
Well, that's not true. I mean, I don't think the poor can plan to be impoverished in retirement. You know, everybody needs to save for their retirement. We tend to deal with the affluent here, but the entire process is scalable down to anyone who can put a nickel aside for the future.
Yeah. How do we know, or how can we calculate, let's say, how much we actually need to save for retirement?
It's not a very difficult task, and there's a lot of great applications on the Internet that will help you do that. We have 75 calculators, many of which are designed to help people with their retirement planning issue. Essentially, you need to pick a income level you think you'd be comfortable with at retirement in inflation-adjusted dollars, and then back from that and say, okay, if that's my income level, how much capital at work do I need to sustain that after I take into account Social Security and other fixed assets like a military pension or whatever? It's a very simple, straightforward math problem that anybody can do on the Internet for free.
Yeah, for sure. How do most people finance their retirement? I'm sure there's a range of strategies to choose from. You kind of talked a little bit about those.
Well, everybody's got Social Security, and then many people have other assets. They might have income from retirement, from another state retirement plan or a military retirement plan, or they might have income from apartment buildings. And those are all pretty well fixed, known. So then you have to say to yourself, over and above those fixed incomes that I'm expecting to receive, what do I need? And then what capital level do I need to sustain that income flow?
Yeah. And, of course, lately we've been certainly reminded of volatility in the market and in a portfolio. It's always something you kind of have to think about, I guess. But with all the things going on in the global, the national, the local economies that we're all dealing with, it seems like it can be an impossible task to try and protect yourself.
It's not impossible. It's almost business as usual. I've been at this business since 1973, and I'm tired of counting up all the end-of-the-world crises that we've been through. every year you got a different set of worries, and yet everybody I know gets up and goes to work and tries to improve their products and tries to improve their service and make or invest something new make something better, and that's how the world economy grows. And as long as you believe the world economy is going to continue to grow, then in the long term, you should profit by owning stocks around the world. In the short term, just deal with it. It's going to go up and down. So the issue is how much at every stage of your life should you have in risky assets and how much should you have in very safe assets? And having enough safe assets to tide you through the ups and downs of the market allow you to sleep well at night and weather the storm financially.
And is there a percentage that we, safe to risk?
That depends on your time frame. If I was 25 years old, just out of college, Didn't expect to use my retirement income for 30 or more years. I would have 100% equity, and I would just not even think about it. On the other hand, if I was 3 years before retirement, I'd want to have a pretty good chunk in safe assets so that I could say to myself, look, no matter what happens, for the next 10 years, I've got very safe assets I can pull out without regard to what happens to the market. So I can sleep well at night, because by the end of 10 years, these issues that we see in the horizon today will be ancient history, and the market will probably have gone on to all-time highs.
I remember reading something that you wrote about investing and stocks, and you say, wait, when something's on sale, like shirts or clothing or whatever it might be, we rush out and buy it. And yet when the stock market goes down and we run the other way, we sell.
Yeah, and what I wrote was that, you know, a week or so ago, I actually left the office after work and drove through a thunderstorm, through horrible traffic here in Miami, to buy some shirts. And my wife will tell you that nobody on earth hates going to the mall more than I do. I'd rather three big guys took me out and beat me up than spend 1 minute in the mall. And as a digression, I think the mall's got it wrong. Guys would go shopping with their wives a little more often if, when you walked into the store, there was a big easy chair and a big widescreen TV, and you could watch the football game. And then your wife could go and try on stuff, and everybody would be happy. But anyway, I digress. The thing is that I hate going to the store, but even I got myself in the car because I need some new shirts. And I'm going to wear those shirts for quite some time. And when Brooks Brothers says, hey, you know, we got our best shirts at 50% off, then I say, yeah, you know, I guess I'll do this. Well, stocks are something that people need in the future. They're going to need them for a long time. And when the stock market goes on sale, instead of throwing up your hands and selling everything you own, you ought to say, oh, wow, this is time to get in. Because we know from, you know, we got a couple hundred years of data on stock market performance, and we know that people who buy when the market's down have better performance than people who buy when it's high, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, what we're supposed to be doing in finance is buy low, sell high. And yet too many, not everybody, but far too many people sell when the market's going down and buy when it's going up. And we can see that from the cash flows in and out of the market. We know those almost to the penny in and out of say, mutual funds. And a large number of people are systematically taking dead aim at their feet with a 44.
Well, Kaya Nuglaris emailed in and wondered your suggestions for, quote, quote, safe investments at this time. She says, we like CDs, but not with the interest rates where they are now.
Well, safe investments, you know, people who got used to in the 80s, you know, 14% returns on money market funds with, quote, no risk, you know, needed to understand that the inflation rate was 17% and they were paying taxes on that 14% they earned. You've never been able to make any real return on the, quote, safe assets. And today it's even worse. What meager little amount of interest you're getting is not nearly close to what the real inflation rate you're looking at. And so it's impossible to meet any kind of economic objectives with the, quote, safe assets. You need to have a storehouse of value to fund your close-in spending needs. Beyond that, if you don't invest in the world's markets, there's no hope that you'll be able to amass any kind of wealth. Having said that, the choices for safe investors are pretty grim these days. We keep a fair chunk of change to run our business here, and I'm used to now balancing a checkbook at my Schwab money market interest of 63 cents per month. You know, that's a big dividend I get on $500,000 of cash reserves for the business. That's going nowhere fast. But I gotta keep it because I need money for emergencies for the business and to pay my staff, and you know, there's a certain amount of money that everybody needs in safe assets. So you just got to suck it up and say, well, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously you can shop CDs, you can look at treasuries, but the longer you go out on even a safe bond, the more you're going to be punished when and if interest rates go up. And I think interest rates are, there's a sort of a natural boundary for interest rates below which they're not going to fall, and that's zero. And so planning for interest rates to go down much further doesn't make much sense. On the other hand, there's a good opportunity for interest rates to go up. And if you hold long-term issues, you're going to be stuck in something that's going to have decreased value and still lock you in at very low rates. And it's not a happy position to be in. When I started in the business in 1973, we were having very high inflation. And everybody remembers 73, 74, the stock market was terrible. But bondholders were getting just brutalized by the high interest rates, and people have sort of forgotten that.
You know, by the way, you mentioned Investor Solutions. How do you guys make money? I guess I want people to know that you're not recommending things because you get paid to steer people to them.
No, that's a good point. We're fee-only advisors. You come in we get paid on a percentage of assets under management. Other fee-only advisors get paid on an hourly basis, on a retainer. But once you contract with us to manage your money, we can't change our outcome, by one single penny by recommending one type of investment over another. They're totally commission-free, and that removes any kind of conflicts of interest that we might have with our investors. Because on the flip side, if I'm a broker and you come to me with, say, $1 million, and you say, Frank, I just inherited this money, I'm a very conservative investor. Well, one thing that might go through my mind is a 3-year treasury note, but I know I'm going to make $25 on $1 million 3-year treasury note. And then on the other end of the scale is a variable annuity, or even worse, one of these index-linked annuities. And commission rates can go as high as 12% on those. They fall through the regulatory cracks because they're, in many cases, they're bank products or something strange. But, you know, if I'm the salesman and I'm looking at a $25 commission versus a $120,000 commission, I can make that a new index link annuity stand up on the table and dance. But in many ways, it's the worst possible product I could recommend to you. And therefore, this conflict of interest permeates the entire discussion. And so we've tried to eliminate that.
Yeah. Frank Armstrong, our guest today, he is a certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. You can join in with your retirement investment questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page and post at the Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about saving and saving for your retirement today with Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner, president of Investor Solutions, Inc. And Frank, we have an email from Lorraine wondering, should people in their 40s or younger be counting on Social Security? It doesn't seem like it's a guarantee that it'll still be solvent 20 or 30 years from now.
At the present rate, it won't be solvent. That doesn't mean you can't count on it. There's a big difference. It's a political issue. There's not a single penny of Social Security in the Social Security Trust Fund. There's not one penny. And so what we're faced with is a program that is very shortly going to cost more than the tax coming in to support it, which means that instead of directly paying out receipts from Social Security tax to Social Security beneficiaries, they're going to have to go into the general accounts, and we're going to have to increase taxes one way or another to support that deficit. and that leads to a potential clash between the generations that's going to be pretty ugly, because systematically we have been promising ourselves benefits that we can never afford to fund, and we haven't funded anything for them. So the Grey Panthers vote. We know they vote, and they're never going to take Social Security away, but the increase in benefits is going to be very, very small compared to what we're used to seeing. The percentage of benefits that you're going to get to support your retirement relative to, say, what our fathers were getting is going to be very small, and you're going to see things like means testing, which says, okay, you know, Larry and Frank, you guys are rich. We're not going to pay you anything, but you paid all your life, but you're not getting anything, so that we can afford to pay some of these other people, or they're going to tax all of it, or they're going to tax all of it that even poor people get, and they're going to increase the retirement age. So instead of my age is, I think, 65 and a half, for people in the next generation, it might be 70 or so. Everybody knows the fix is, the math is pretty straightforward. What we don't have is the political will to straighten it out, because it's the third rail of politics. Yeah. So, yes, you can look forward to getting some Social Security. No, it won't be nearly the amount that your father's got. And, yes, you need to save in addition to that, or else you're going to be eating cat food in your retirement.
Mm-hmm. Adam in Vilas County, we go on to you now. Hi, Adam.
Yes, for the sake of disclosure, I worked for the Wisconsin Bureau on Aging for a decade in my life as a state research analyst, so I have some familiarity but also biases. I retired in 2000, and I'll be very blunt with you. I think that your whole thing is leaving out the impact of one bad national government decisions, partly under pressure from special interests, and two, the role of the multinational corporations. I have watched, and this is a fact, I could document it, I did open my books to you, sir, my Social Security since 2000 in terms of inflation and also the failure to raise the last few years has lost about 10% of real value. My pension, state pension, has last 3 years lost, I believe, about close to 6%. And if you add in inflation for the last several years, it's another 3-4%. So not down 10% basically overall. My 4-unit that I own, the rent has gone up for a decade at 1-2% a year. The property tax, insurance, and Madison gas and electric bill have gone up total 4-5% a year minimum. So deferred comp, I luckily took my money out before the very latest crash, and I'm earning 4% on fixed investment type thing, but you have to subtract inflation. So the end result is a living standard that's eroding 2-3% a year. And I feel that no matter what my investment choice is, I can't do anything about it with the wars and the rich not paying their fair share, and the corporation shipping all the good jobs overseas, so no one's got any money to spend here that would allow people to earn some money locally. I think you're leaving out this very important thing, but I submit to you my case. I had a four-legged stool, Social Security pension, rent from a 4-unit, and deferred comp, and slowly genteel poverty is setting in at 2-3% a year.
Okay, well, that's a laundry list of issues, and most of which I absolutely agree are appropriate. The base case that national policy needs to be revised is probably unassailable. On the question of the multinational companies, I might beg to differ with part of that. We have one of the world's worst tax structures for corporations, and that is forcing people to do things that are not strictly economically driven. And if you were on the board of directors of one of those corporations and you didn't take efforts to minimize the tax impact of your total corporation, you would be negligent. And I think what we need to do is rationalize corporate taxes, that's for sure, There's a double taxation of dividends that doesn't make sense. The current 15% tax bracket on corporate dividend, qualified corporate tax dividends, is a very bad solution to that. You know, there's plenty of things we need to do, but a 4% return on a retirement portfolio is not going to get you where you need to be. You could I think for the long term, I think a combination of stocks and bonds other than fixed income would give you the prospect of an increasing capital value in real terms and an increasing income to offset that inflation. But as we have observed earlier, fixed income and guaranteed accounts are producing and have always produced less than inflation, and so genteel poverty is a real prospect without a investment plan that's designed to grow over time.
Adam, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. An email from Steve who says, I'm an 18-year-old college student. I've been working a summer job, which I'll hopefully be able to keep through the school year. Wondering whether I should be putting a portion of my paycheck toward a 401k or in a Vanguard account right now, or whether I should wait until I get a full-time job. I know that starting early would help utilize the compounding effect, but with the relatively small income I receive, am I at a great disadvantage if I wait before saving, investing?
The best thing you can do for yourself is to invest whatever you can as early as you can. There's three determinants to a safe retirement. Number one, how long you've invested. Number two, how much you put in. And number three, what rate of return you get. And starting early, there's no substitute for that. Having said all of that, as an 18-year-old college student, if you're running up education debts, then perhaps you need to look at paying them off first, because you probably can't make as much as the debts are compounding at in many cases. So you need to do that analysis. But people who save early in their life are going to find that that money grows to rather large sums in meaningful terms later on in their life. The trick is to keep it fully invested and not yank it out from time to time to buy toys, you know, because you can save diligently for 10 years, and then splurge it all on a car, and you have gutted your future retirement benefit. But if you keep it in play for long enough and you invest it wisely, it should grow to very significant amounts. But not at the expense of not paying off consumer debt and college loans and things.
Sort of on the other end of the age spectrum, we had an email from Joan, who is 69 years old, working full-time for at least another 2 years, collecting Social Security and stuffing away money in my retirement accounts, no pension. But this recent stock market volatility has me panicked. How much should I keep in stocks? What about bonds? I know I should look at the long term, but for many of us approaching retirement, the term till retirement is not so long.
Well, you need to systematically reduce your level of risk as you approach retirement, so that the day that you retire, you have enough fixed income assets to see you through the medium medium term, say 7 to 10 years out into the future, and that way you can rest easy on the other as much as possible as it goes up and down. I don't want to pretend that it's fun watching it go up and down. These big swings are disconcerting, but if you take the long term view, it's part of the way the market works. It's the reason you get these higher rates of return. So you need an investment plan that accounts for the volatility of the market, and in fact capitalizes on it. I mean, we all would rather have a totally safe return. So in order to induce us to take variable returns, which is what risk is, you have to get a higher rate of return. Otherwise, no one would take a variable return over a fixed one. And that's the way markets work to price assets, and that's the way they work to reward investors. But you have to adjust those parameters to meet your particular needs.
We have Diane in Waupaca who has a question or comment. Hi, Diane.
Hello. And I might be cut off because I see a cell tower coming off, but I'd like to know what is on sale now. You were talking earlier about, you know, buying low and selling high.
What's your opinion?
The horizons right now.
Okay. The global stock market is on sale. If you look around the world, I think the ratios that we use to judge the value of stocks is at a very, very attractive and compelling value. Notwithstanding that we all know the problems of European debt, we all know the problems of Bank America, we all know the problems with our banking system. Nevertheless, if you take a look at the earnings that companies have and you compare that to the historical price you would have paid for those earnings, they're very attractive. And unless you think the world is going to end, this is probably a pretty good entry point.
Thank you very much, Diane, for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. I have some open lines to get you on pretty quickly. An email from Ann in Appleton says, thanks for a fascinating show. What do you think about my helping my 17-year-old granddaughter to open a Roth based on her wages this year? I'd like to get her used to saving and investing.
I don't think you could do anything better. Then you know, that's the ultimate long-term gift for a grandchild, and because that money will compound to an enormous amount of funds if she keeps it employed for the rest of her life. And as we all know, the Roth is, once you make the contribution, all future distributions of it, as long as they qualify at retirement, are totally tax-free. And it don't get no better than that. and for at 17 years, it might be 50 years easily that she has time for this to compound. And the only problem is you need to counsel her so that she doesn't take it out to buy a Miata 3 years from now.
Wow, could you imagine $10,000, let's say, compounded over 50 years?
It would be enormous. And let's say you got 7 or 8% return, real return, which is what the stock market has done. Real return is the return over and above inflation. So you might be 10% or 11% compounding at a rate that's nominally 11%, but in real terms is 8 or 7%. That's huge.
Yeah, that's enormous. Well, a Facebook question from Cheryl. My husband and I recently graduated from college, have about $6,000 to $7,000 saved, but with huge expenses like buying a house, buying a car, emergencies, kids, and therefore college funds in our future, how do we find the pennies to save for retirement? Investing our little savings account into the stock market that I don't really understand makes me very nervous. How do we make the leap into investing?
You budget that as part of your overall budget. I mean, if you don't save, you won't have anything later. And you know, I love almost every aspect of my job, but we have 5,000 or 6,000 employees in various pension plans that we administer. And the one part of it that's really horrible is when you see an employee who hasn't saved or hasn't saved effectively, who's got to retire, and they don't have any money, and you don't have any answer for them. So I personally think the best way to do this is to save first, to put aside $100 or $200 or whatever you can afford per paycheck into something you can't get your little hands on ever. And that's always worked for me. You're talking to a 67-year-old infant who likes his toys. And if it went through my checking account, I wouldn't have been able to save. But I always diverted it to by payroll deduction or some other mechanism into accounts that theoretically would be very difficult for me to touch. And so it compounded for me to enough to where I feel, based on my standard of living, I'm financially independent. As a rule of thumb, if I think most investment advisors will tell you, if if you're not saving at least 10% of your total income per year, you're not likely to be able to retire at any time soon. And if you're not saving 15%, you're not going to be able to retire comfortably. And those are very large numbers for a lot of people, for a generation of people who grew up with the idea that or not with the idea, but who grew up with a practice of not saving anything at all. I mean, our savings rate has gone from about 14% of total income per year back in the 70s to minus one in 2007, and now we've seen some. Now we've seen some increase in that as a result of people are beginning to deleverage to some extent. But, you know, if you have a nation that doesn't save anything, that's rapidly growing older, well, you know, someday, hello, you're going to have to retire, and there's not going to be anything to support you. And having the world's best investment advisor at that point isn't going to help.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do for people with no capital to invest.
Email from Diane. My husband and I are 57, have $7,900 left in our term life insurance, which will last us about 4.5 years. Would we be better to cash it in and put it in a Roth or just let it be eaten up in premiums? We have $12,000 left on our house and no debt.
Well, it's not term life insurance if it's if you've got a balance and it's going to pay future premiums. I can't give you individual advice on that because I don't know what your insurance needs are, and I don't know what the internal costs of the policy are. It's something you'll have to take a look at on an individual basis. I for most people think they should invest in term and invest the difference long term in the stock market. That doesn't work in every case, but for 99% of people, that's the best solution. But you know, you need life insurance, it's typically pretty far down on people's lists of wants. But you need to have life insurance coverage of some amount. The question is, how much do you need, and how should you buy it for young families? You know, if they don't have $2 or $3 million worth of life insurance, they better not plan to stay dead for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And for older people, maybe they don't need any at all, or maybe they need it for their estate costs. It's an individual issue. Just I can't give you individual advice.
TJ and Spooner has a question for you. Hi, TJ.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I am 29 years old. I have about $25,000 with a federal PSP account, which is the federal 401k program, basically. I have left that job about a year ago, and I have about $25,000 with a normal financial planner, a mix of Roth IRAs and non-deferred. Would it be better to roll over that PSP into the other financial planner, or is it all right to leave those apart?
As I understand it, that federal plan is about as good as you will ever see. And if you do a decent asset allocation and if they'll allow you to leave it there, my advice would be to leave it there. I don't see how you can get any broader coverage at any lower cost in a tax-deferred vehicle. That's not what I would do in for most corporate pensions, but my understanding is the federal plan is about as good as there is.
There you go. Thank you, TJ. And Tony in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Tony.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about my particular retirement strategy and see what you think of it. I'm 65 years old, retired. I put whatever money I think I need in the next 5 years out of that fund in short-term government bonds, what I need in the 5 years after that, in corporate bonds. How reasonable a plan do you think that is?
I applaud the first part. I'm not sure that corporate bonds will give you the kind of return you need after that 5 years. I would have some global equity exposure in that portfolio. Maybe not 100%, but corporate bonds are not much better than other fixed income alternatives, and they're all going to be subject to horrendous discounting in the event that interest rates go up. So 5 years from now, if interest rates were, say, 5 or 6% higher than they are today, your corporate bond portfolio might be only worth 60% of what it is today, and that's on a before-inflation-adjusted basis.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for calling. Rose in Blanchardville, hello to you.
Hi.
And what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is this. This is one thing. It's going to be a short call. In the 50s, I remember the nun saying to us, when in the bookkeeping class, you save some money for yourself. Always pay yourself first. You're worth $5 at least a week. Then put the money anywhere else if you're going to have to buy food or what have you, or rent. And that's why I think a lot of older people have money today, because they paid themselves first.
Yeah.
They worked hard for it, and they figured $5 a week was worth it.
Frank?
I couldn't agree more. As we said to a previous caller, paying yourself first is the way to have the money. If I tried to save what was left over at the end of the month, there probably wouldn't be anything. But if I made $5, in your case, disappear out of my paycheck and I couldn't get my hands on it and I invested it properly, that would grow to a significant amount of money. So I am a total advocate of pay yourself first.
All right. Thank you very much. And with that, we are about out of time. Some people said that there is money in the Social Security Fund. They were disagreeing with you. You had some callers.
There's not one penny there. Not one penny, period. There's some IOUs in a drawer someplace, but there's not, and they mimeographed those off. There's not one penny. But by the way, you know, I actually am the sole administrator for the Nation of the Marshall Islands, which is a little tiny nation way out in the Pacific. And they actually have $60 million set aside for 60,000 very young people. On the other hand, we have 330 million very old people, and not one penny.
Frank, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. You'll be interested in our next show coming up, because right after you, we're going to be talking about developing financial literacy in young children. What do you think of that?
I would be interested, and that's something we are very interested in here. Some of our staff members spend a lot of time going around to our local schools trying to help do that. And typically the schools don't do a great job of that. They're overtaxed on their resources, and that's pretty far down on their priorities. But we think it's an important priority.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Always great, Larry.
Frank Armstrong, the author of The Informed Investor, co-author of Save Your Retirement. He is a certified financial planner and founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. If you could probably just go type in Investor Solutions, Inc. if you're interested in learning more about it. Frankly, we have a link on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I know they have a lot of educational materials up there relating to saving and retirement, and you can look at those for free if you wish. And as I said, coming up, I'm going to switch gears slightly here and zero in on the very many younger people as we talk about developing financial literacy in young children. Karen Holden, Emeritus Professor of Public Affairs and Consumer Science at UW-Madison. She's also affiliated with the UW's Center for Financial Literacy. Our guest coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.